loath to step down far enough to see, for her dignity and my own. Mads, can you come up here? I wanted her out of that room, away from Luca. Now? She called back. Right now, I called back. I found myself hoping, near praying, that Rue was running from a warrant. Warrants didn't beat women the way Rue had been beaten. Warrants didn't produce sons or stepsons with disturbing ideas about sex and boundaries. Luca seemed like such a nice kid. But what if he was on the run from a seriously messed up father figure? They could be fleeing unimaginable abuse. If I told this man where to find them, I'd be no better than Rue. Considering there was a child involved, I might be worse. Dear God, let Rue be running from a warrant. I also had no idea how much I should tell Davis. How much would Davis want to know? She was his kid, but dads and daughters. Too much detail might do more harm than good. At the same time, how many secrets could I wedge between me and my husband before they stretched us too far from each other? We're almost finished, she hollered, and I immediately thought, finished with what? I hope to God she meant the video. Surely they had leaped to opposite ends of the sofa the second my voice broke into their world. You've seen that video 100 times. Can you please come up here? I hollered back, my voice cracking with embarrassment and strain. Thank God, not 10 seconds later, I heard Maddie stomping her way up. What? She said. I blinked. I had nothing. Monster! Is Oliver still sleeping? I asked at last. Can you run him down to Lisa's so we can hit the pool? Sure, she said. She didn't look any different to me, except her cheeks were still pink. If I hadn't seen what I'd seen, I wouldn't have known that anything more than earnest scuba learning had been going on. There was a secret world, whole and intricate, inside my stepdaughter, and I was privileged to see only its edges. I didn't realize how intently I was staring at her until she added, "You okay, monster?" Of course, I told her, and then I looked her in the eye, very serious. Are you okay? Super fab, she said, and bounced back down to get the baby. The mother in me knew I'd have to talk to her about her decisions and her body, try to guide her out of too deep water into safety. But I had other pieces, awful pieces that Rue had woken up inside me, whispering. No wonder Rue had reacted so strongly when I told her Luca had been sneaking over to see Maddie. Luca owned Rue's real name, her point of origin, everything I needed. And kids talked. She knew it, I knew it. All teenagers were a whole and secret world unto themselves, and they revolved around each other, whispering. If Maddie and Luca were as close as they had just looked, then everything I needed to take Rue down was already locked tight inside this girl I loved. Maddie wouldn't tell me if I simply asked, though. She was loyal to a fault, and her feelings for this boy, though new, ran deep. She wouldn't tell unless I made her. My dilemma was, I could. I could make her talk. I could make her tell me. If she didn't know, I could make her ask him. I could push her, turn her, force her. She wouldn't want her father to know what I'd seen. I could use that. Maddie was a good person, but she was young, her character not fully formed, and kids, under pressure, turned on each other. I had learned this from that sad O. Henry story that had unfolded between Tig and me. If I were willing to use her secrets against her, against this girl I loved, I could get ahead on points. Beat Rue. I could win. The thought was so attractive, I felt it as electricity zinging through my body. I could see myself standing over Rue, her past in my hands, making fear rise in her just as she'd done to me. It was heady stuff. But it would be wrong. It scared me how far I was down the road to blackmailing Maddie before that thought came. I was already thinking tactics, exactly how to approach her, press her open, dig the information out. She loved me, and I knew her so very well. I could see exactly how to do it. But what would be broken in the process? Maddie's faith in me, her trust, maybe her love. I could turn her against me at a time when my lies were creating a gap between me and my husband. I might wring out a way to save my family from Rue, only to find I'd wrecked it thoroughly myself in the process. 15. Oliver had finished his bedtime nurse session. He was asleep on his back between Davis and me, limp as a sweet little rag. Davis had his big hand on Oliver's full belly, spanning it. I needed to take the baby to his crib and get some sleep. Spending tomorrow on a tiny boat with Rue was bound to be stressful, and I'd have a brand new diver in my care. I didn't move him, though. Not yet. I needed to talk to Davis about what I'd seen, and with Oliver here, he would stay calmer. I had to do this. One way or another, Luca would be out of Maddie's life come Monday, but a lot could happen in a weekend. I'd left the kids unsupervised for less than an hour. Davis needed to know how important it was that we keep eyes on them. I touched Davis's arm and he looked up from his son. My steady gaze let him know this was serious. We have to talk about Mads and Luca. There's been a shift. They're more than friends now. Something male and primal woke up right behind his eyes, immediate and inadvertent.
They're going together?
I'm not sure kids call it that these days. I was, in fact, absolutely certain that they didn't. He was already tense, though. I was gentle with him. They got a little bit physical with each other down in the basement.
How physical? He asked, eyes narrowing. Do you mean he kissed her and I need to pretend I think that's sweet, or he got handsy and I'm probably going to have to go to prison?
I smiled, mostly to reassure him. How much detail do you want? I hoped not a lot. Every minute I spent with my husband, relaxed and regular, was already a silent lie. I didn't want to say bald-faced untruths about his daughter out loud in our own bed. But I would if he pushed me. Rue had taught me that. There was no way I was going to tell him the details of what I'd seen. It would raise too many questions about Rue and Luca. He wouldn't want them around Maddie or me, and I didn't have a choice in that matter. He shook his head, emphatic.
No details. Just on a scale of 1 to pregnant, how worried am I?
I leaned over Oliver to kiss him. Everyone had their clothes on, but not everyone's hands were in the G-rated zone. That was close enough to truth to count.
Okay.
Some of the tension went out of his body, and I knew that what he was imagining bore almost no relation to what I'd seen. They've started down a road, though, and we know where it ends, I told him. Don't let them sneak downstairs or any place alone. Things can escalate fast at their age.
I remember, Davis said ruefully.
I did too. I'd survived my own sophomore year by stealing desperate drinking looks at Tig. His narrow hips in low-slung jeans, the light turning the edges of his curls to burnished brass. Then he'd kissed me. His mouth on mine had cut through clouds of pot, 1,000 gulps of wine, waking my body to its own possibilities. I shouldn't be thinking of that,
Not at all, but especially not here in bed beside my husband. The baby we'd made in this same bed was splayed out, so relaxed he was practically a liquid. But a text from Restoration Garage had landed in my phone while we'd been pool diving. Nothing serious, just 6 words. You still listen to the Pixies? A silly question, and yet I felt flushed and a little trembly when I read it, as if I were 15 again. As if it were a note scribbled on lined paper, folded 3 times, and passed up a row of desks to me. I'd known better than to answer Tig, but I'd answered anyway. We'd texted back and forth the whole time I was making dinner. Nothing deep, music and nostalgia. I told myself it didn't mean a thing. Now, this close to my husband, I recognized that for the hollow lie it was. It had meant something. If I were back at Tig's right now, just the two of us, I'd be no more safe than Maddie was with Luca. The difference was, I knew better, and I had no loving father, no hovering monster to stop me. I had to stop myself. Davis said, "That's the worst part. I've been a 16-year-old male, so I know exactly what that kid is thinking. It makes me want to break his arms a little bit." "Poor old Duddy," I said, invoking one of Maddie's pet names for him. He smiled. "She's a good kid. Let's not overthink this. We keep an eye on them and make sure they stay busy. They'll be diving all day tomorrow, and no one ever got knocked up in a wetsuit." He nodded, but his forehead was still creased. I wished I could tell him that in 3 days it wouldn't matter. Davis and I might have bigger problems then, as he tried to process all the lies I'd told him recently, not to mention all the lies I'd lived in his presence every day for years. Either that, or I'd break and give Lolly Shipley's rightful money to Rue. I wasn't sure how I would live with myself if I chose that route, but at least then Luca's wandering hands would be in the Maldives. He'd be drinking virgin daiquiris and not being extradited right beside his mother. I wasn't sure what my face did when I thought these things, but it didn't matter. Davis was looking down at Oliver again, talking softly to his son. "Thank you for being a baby. You have a single teaspoon of testosterone right now, and we appreciate it." I put my hand on Oliver's chest, grateful too. Davis looked back up at me. "Do you think he's pressuring her? I read about those bracelets, the one that tell boys what a girl will do, and the boys act like they're entitled to it. Does Maddie have those?"
"Snap bracelets?" I said, and in spite of everything, I laughed. "Davis, that was 2003, and anyway, Mads is not that kid. She's lead clarinet in marching band. She's in the D&D club. That is not the snap bracelet demographic."
"Okay, standing down. Trying, anyway," Davis said. His thick, dark eyebrows, so like his daughter's, came together, worried. "Should I talk to her?"
"God, no," I said instantly. Maddie would curl up in a little wad and die if he did. Not to mention, I would lose my leverage.
His face became very serious, and he looked me in the eyes, putting his hand lightly over mine. Oliver's breath gently moved our hands together, up and down.
"This isn't your job. It's Laura's. And mine, but this part is really Laura's, and she's not doing it. Here you are, like always. I can't talk to Madison about what it's like to be a teenage girl. I have no idea. I'm so damn grateful she has you."
I couldn't bear his sweetness, his sincerity. I was the one planning to pressure her into betraying her friend to save myself. I could tell myself that pushing her into selling out Luca wouldn't matter in the long run. They were just kids. She would recover and forgive me. I could not make myself believe it, though. I'd sold out Tig, and it still echoed in my life. I knew better. I dropped my eyes.
I better take this little boy to bed.
I'll do it, Davis told me, but I shook my head.
He's had a fussy day. If he stirs, I'll rock him a little and let him get a bumper nurse.
I took Oliver to his crib, and I did rock him for a little, sitting in our glider with his weight a heavy comfort on my chest. When he was deeply, deeply out, I put him to bed. By then the house was quiet all around me. I went down the hall to Maddie's big room over the garage. I eased her door open, and there she was, sprawled out dead asleep on her stomach. She had kicked one foot outside the blankets, just like Oliver always did. Her phone was by her pillow, though she wasn't allowed to take it to bed. She'd put it on the charger in her bathroom half an hour before lights out, but sometime after that, she'd crept out and gotten it back, no doubt to sneak text Luca. Probably Shannon, too, getting real-time advice on what to say to Luca next. I wished I knew her security code. Reading their text history would be less damaging than what I planned to do. Her soft mouth was slack, her curls a riot on her pillow. She was so innocent, and she loved me. I was going to damage that innocence, that love. I hoped we could recover. I went back down the hall, and Davis had fallen asleep, too. I couldn't bring myself to slide back into bed beside him and curl around him as if everything were normal. Tomorrow, after the dive, I was going to peel his daughter open like a little grape. All at once I realized I was starving. I couldn't remember the last time I had eaten. I'd avoided swallowing at dinner, moving food around, then dumping it down the disposal. Now, I felt so empty, I was howling. I went downstairs on autopilot, divorced from my body. I felt as if I were perched on my own shoulder, watching my hands open the fridge and unpack the leftovers. I picked up half a meatloaf and bit into it like it was an apple. I swiped two fingers through the potatoes, then shoved the whole huge scoop into my mouth. I swallowed without chewing, without even tasting, and went back for more. I knew from long experience that once I plowed through all this, I would want sweetness. I didn't keep desserts in the house, but there were frozen waffles, a whole box, and I had some real maple syrup in the fridge. I got the waffles out, still eating meatloaf from my hand, setting the toaster oven to preheat. I knew what came next. I would eat until I was sick and sluggish with it, then empty myself in ways that would feel glorious and freeing. Once I was done, I would be swamped in immediate shame, so bleak and dreadful that I might go again two or three times, eating and emptying myself until I was a husk, raw-throated, my eyes bloodshot and watering. I swallowed the meat in my mouth and bit into the loaf again. I wanted to stop. I couldn't stop. I wanted someone to talk to, but I had no one. What I wanted was not to be alone, but my lies left me alone even when Davis was 6 inches away. I swallowed another gob of food so huge it stretched my throat. I felt like a snake as the mass moved down. I had the crazy urge to call Rue. She'd been so oddly sympathetic. "I want this to work out for you." At least with her, I could be honest. Her mocking and her needling had stopped. She'd recognized herself in me, and she was such a narcissist, it made her warm toward me. The warmth wasn't going to stop her from wrecking me and tearing my family apart, though. Maybe it even made the prospect more appealing to her, like Munchausen's masochism by proxy. I couldn't call her. I was not such a beaten dog that I would belly creep for petting from the hand that held the whip. I bit and swallowed, tearing at the meat. What did it say about me that Rue was the only person I could be honest with? Only she saw me down to my core, dark and deep, bitter as wormwood. All the things that made me hate myself, she actively admired. And she was the only one who saw me whole. I brought the rind of meatloaf to my mouth again,
and stopped. It wasn't true. There was someone else. Tig didn't know everything, but he knew my past.
And Tig, better than anyone, would understand why I had befriended Charlotte. After all, I'd done it to him, too. I'd stalked him and helped him, all the while staying anonymous. He would believe that my motives, at least, had been good.
I set the last of the meatloaf down on the counter by the Tupperware full of cold potatoes and the waffle box. I turned the toaster off. I was full, but not sick with it. Not yet. I left all the food where it was and rinsed the sauce and potatoes off my hands in the sink. I grabbed my phone off the charging station and went down into the basement, closing the door behind me. I opened up my contacts. There, Tig waited for me, hidden under the innocuous name of his business. I scrolled down to his entry and opened it as I walked all the way across to the wet bar. I wiped at my mouth, crusted in sauce, and then I touched the number. It only rang twice.
"Smiffy," Tig said.
He sounded awake, though it was now midnight. Same old night owl. "What are you doing?" I asked.
"Nothing, reading." "You okay?"
"No," I said. And this was a relief, to let a simple one-word truth pass through my mouth.
"Aw, Smith," he said.
And I wondered why I'd ever thought this nickname was distancing and sexless. He said it so sweet. "I'm losing. I can't get a toehold. She's so slippery," I said. I sank down until I was sitting on the floor, legs crossed, bent over my phone. "I was wondering if you remembered anything else. About Rue, Ange, whatever. Anything that could help me." Tig paused, thinking, but only for a moment.
"I'm pretty sure I told you everything."
"Maybe something small, like the name of a city, or if she ever called her kid anything but Randy. I'll wait. Just take a few minutes and think back through it. It's important. I mean, obviously, here I am calling you after midnight." A longer pause this time. In the end, he said,
"I got nothing." "Is that why you called?"
The question sounded rhetorical. We both knew it wasn't the only reason, but pretending dressed the call up in respectability. My life would be so much easier if I would only learn to buy my own BS. I shook my head. I'd called, in part, because I was so damn tired of lying. So I didn't. "No." The truth felt so good I didn't want to stop. "My stepdaughter has gotten awfully close with Rue's kid. So close, I bet she knows things. Things that would help me fight his mother. I could ask, but she won't tell me. She'll lie, you know how kids are. You know how we were. But I know things about her, too. I could make her tell me. But, God, I would pretty much have to tear it out of her guts. She trusts me. I love her. I don't want to be an awful person." I was crying.
"You're not an awful person," he said, immediate and sure.
"I don't want to be," I said. "I don't want to lose my family." We sat there with that for a moment.
"Then why are you calling me?" Tig said.
And it was an acknowledgement. I nodded in the dark, although he couldn't see me. "I know, I know. I called because I'm lonely and I'm tired and I'm fighting, and right now it feels like you're the only one who's on my side." Another pause.
"I am on your side."
On the other end of the line, I could hear him moving, maybe sitting down, or if he was in bed, shifting the covers. A rustling, intimate sound.
"I shouldn't call you." "You're not a bad person," he said.
"Okay," I said. "But Tig was sketchy, a little.
He knew a fellow who would crush a car without recording the VIN or reporting it. He kept a water pipe right on his living room table. He had a good heart. He'd always had a lovely heart. He was loyal and kind, but he could be a little bendy on the ethics. A little situational in a way that Davis never was. But so could I. And I'd gotten even bendier since Rue showed up. Maybe I had more in common with Tig than I did with Davis. Still, I called him on it, called us both out.
If I'm not a bad person, what am I doing creeping down to the basement to talk to you in the middle of the night? My husband is asleep upstairs. If this wasn't wrong, I wouldn't hide it.
He gave a low chuckle. I don't know. All I know is, I'm glad you called. I keep thinking about you. 9 times an hour. I'm married, I said. I wanted to hear the words out loud. But I'm single, so mostly it's you being terrible, he said, and I let out a startled burst of laughter.
Did you just throw me under the bus again? I said.
Oh, yeah. Too soon? He said. But too soon wasn't the problem. More like too late, I said. I love my husband, Tig. I love my baby and Mads. I love my life here. I didn't say that life might be blown apart in a matter of days, but we both knew it. There was a good chance this family I'd made would fall to pieces. And if it did, we haven't done anything we can't walk back, Smith, he said. And I haven't been pining. We were close, yeah, but we were also 15. I don't know if this right here, you and me, is anything. All I know is I want to text you every other minute. I want to call you. I know you're married, but I want you to come back over. My whole body went still. My hand was wrapped around the phone so tight, I was surprised the screen didn't crack and shatter. I keep thinking about you too, I admitted. If that's wrong, well, hey, I'm not a perfect guy. I never had a friend like you. Everything between us is always so easy. Back when we were kids, I didn't think of you like that, you know, not like a girlfriend. You were just Smith. My Smith, who had my back. I was happy when you were around. That night, before it all went bad, when we kissed, something changed. And I thought it did. He paused, and I didn't think he would say more unless I answered. I wanted him to say more. I thought so too, I said, an invitation to go on. He took it. I've been with girls before. More than a couple, to be honest. I was with a lot more after. But it's never been easy like that, like we were. Never in my life. I haven't been pining, but maybe in the back of my head, I compared, you know. Then you showed up, and I can't stop wondering. What if we'd never gotten on the road? What if we'd gone back to that mattress together? Slipped it off. Where would we be now? I'd wondered that myself, but I couldn't talk. My throat was clogged with tears. He had no idea what he was saying to me, how much it meant. Back then, I'd hated myself. I'd loathed my body so damn much, I thought no one could ever love me. But he had. Not in spite of, not even though, he'd grown feelings for me simply because of who I was, who we were together. I'm married, I said again. But lots of people were married, and they wrecked it. I could see now how easy it was. It was little baby steps down a road, a text here, a phone call there. The person I was married to was busy, and I was under pressure. And we had this baby, which meant less sleep and less sex than we were used to.
Plus, I was lying to him every minute. If my lies came out, I might not have the choice to keep my marriage.
I love him, I said, and that was also true.
Then don't let me get between that, Tig said, because we're heading that way. I mean, you know that, right?
I know that, I said. We sat quiet, listening to each other breathe.
I better go, I said, and I had to. I had to hang up. Talking to Tig felt too good. It was a safety net, a haven if I refused to pay and Rue destroyed me.
I remembered that night, the night he kissed me before it all went wrong.
I could run toward him now if I chose. It would feel like it had on that dark road when I stamped the pedal down. I knew then, for certain, that I'd been driving, not that it mattered now, but I remembered exactly how it felt to power us up and over the railroad tracks, dangerous and free, unsure of a safe landing. I could do it again. Tell Rue to fuck herself and let whatever happened happen. Be airborne. Let gravity decide how I came down. It was so tempting.
You still play the guitar? He asked, breaking the silence. I was shaking my head as if he could see me, as if he were close enough to touch.
Not for years, I answered.
You could pick it right back up, he said. I bet it'd be so easy. I let that sit, too.
It was difficult to talk at all, but in the end I said, I gotta go.
I know, Tig said. I'm here, though.
I know, I said, and I closed the connection. 16. I woke up with a headache hovering at the base of my brain, a low-slung throbbing of anxiety. It was as if I'd slept all night on the edge of a cliff, feeling myself teeter in my sleep. I popped a couple of Excedrin and ignored it as best I could. Maddie and I had to head out for the docks early, leaving Davis to sleep in as long as Oliver would allow. Rue and Luca were going to meet us there. Rue'd figured, rightly, that I couldn't work against her while prepping for a dive. I didn't have a spare minute, helping Captain Jay and his middle son, Winslow, get the Misbehavin loaded up and ready. Misbehavin was Jay's smaller boat, a 30-foot Munson that could comfortably accommodate 10 divers. It was late in the season. We were running with 7 today. The other group arrived first, a couple who introduced themselves as Tim and Leslie Babbage, plus Tim's older brother, Mark. They were all experienced divers in their late 30s, down from Atlanta on a weekend trip to keep their certifications fresh. Maddie was talking to Winslow and me on the dock, agitating for the English freighter, a favorite dive spot of hers. But she stopped in mid-sentence, staring past me, her breath catching in her throat. I turned and saw Luca hurrying toward us. He was carrying 2 gear bags, the lean muscles in his arms flexing, and the wind off the ocean made his hair stream back like a baby Fabio's. Winslow, who was 40-something and had 2 girls of his own, shot me an amused glance. I smiled back, but it was hollow. Luca's eyes were on the boat. He was looking past Maddie to the day ahead, and all she saw was him. Rue sauntered toward us in his wake, and the very sight of her jacked my heart rate, made me work to keep my smile in place. Not that anyone was looking at me. Both brothers, the married one and the spare, paused to watch Rue. Her pale pink bikini and her skin shone the same through a gauzy white cover-up, the colors and the sheerness conspiring to make her look more naked than naked. Even Captain Jay, who was pushing 70, stopped to look. Leslie Babbage smacked her husband's shoulder, and that broke his hypnosis. He laughed and threw an easy arm around her, turning away with her to stow their gear. The single brother, Mark, kept right on looking.
Rue was aware of his gaze. I could see it in the extra swing she added to her hips, the sly glance she sent me as I walked out to meet her with the liability paperwork. Men are too easy. All I have to do is show up and have tits, she said, skipping the greeting to go straight to gross generalizations. How clever of you to have tits, then, I said, deadpan. That made her chuckle, but I could feel the prickle of something electric in the air between us. She was no more at ease than I was, and I was glad of it. If she was on edge, then there must still be a way for me to win her game. God, how I wanted to win. There was an old picnic table on the walkway just before the dock, and she sat down to fill out the forms with made-up information. It rendered them useless, but there was nothing I could do about that. It was an added pressure, pulsing at the base of my neck. The whole day felt like disaster coming, though it was warm and breezy beautiful, a summer throwback with a high of 87. In Florida, this passed for fall. My feelings of dread, I knew, had little to do with today's dive, and yet they colored everything. The weekend was being eaten up with boat trips and Rue and family obligations. I had almost no room to maneuver, and my time was running out. Rue was flipping through the pages to find the signature lines. She paused to look up at me. Take good care of my boy today. Of course, I said. If she'd been any other mother, I would have asked her to do the same for Maddie. I'd tell her what I'd seen down in my basement. But this woman weaponized sex, and she was proud of it. She might be concerned, but she also might laugh and give Luca a gold star sticker. I didn't know if she was protecting the sweet kid that Luca seemed to be, or actively raising a predator to follow in her footsteps. Now she was filling out his forms, putting in his fake name. He was complicit in this much, at least. He answered to Luca like a pro. But if he was trying to keep his mother out of jail, I couldn't blame him. Most kids would do the same. That went double if the two of them were on the run from the man who had pounded her pretty face and her whole body black and purple until it was as ugly as raw meat. Every instinct, every minute I had spent with him, said Luca was troubled but not rotten. He was also likely new to this. After all, Rue had 3 full sets of fake ID. He had only 1, and the Luca passport had been shiny new and free of stamps. I believed he'd been protected, kept separate from her career until now. Then something, an arrest warrant, an attack, or a marriage gone so sour that it turned deadly, had put them on the road with whatever possessions they could pack up in a hurry. And Rue loved him. That was obvious. Maybe she wanted better for him than for herself. Most mothers did. As she finished the forms and rose, I decided I had to say something. Can I talk to you, mom to mom, about Luca? All movement in her body stopped, as if I'd hit a button. I had her complete attention. Rue's stillness, the pre-planned absence of any tells, was her tell in and of itself. Okay, she said, light, but I heard wariness behind it. Don't let the kids wander off together, even if you're just in another room. There was pleasure, only the smallest twinge, in saying it. Earned, I thought, considering how she'd dumped on my girl. Maddie tomboyed around in no makeup and outsized floppy clothes, and Rue had acted as if Luca were too beautiful and shining to even notice she was female. I wasn't sure what was going on between the kids, but he definitely knew she was a girl. Even so, Rue was staring at me blankly, as if I'd spoken in Latin. I clarified. Things have heated up between Luca and Madison. She shook her head, instantly dismissing me. No, you misunderstood her. He's not into her that way, he told me. That made me laugh, in spite of everything. The real deal, from my belly.
Rue's eyebrows rose.
What? I said, you, the cagiest, most suspicious bitch on planet Earth. You believe a teenage male who says he's not interested in a girl that way.
Her gaze turned speculative, even concerned. I'm not basing this on anything Mads told me. Things have gotten physical. I saw them.
How physical?
Her voice was sharp.
I gave her the same version I'd told Davis, loath to be more honest with this woman than with my own husband. Everyone had their clothes on, but there were some wandering hands. I could practically see the wheels turning behind her eyes. Her gaze went to Maddie and Luca. They'd loaded the bags, and now they were standing on the deck together, yammering back and forth, pointing at an enormous pelican who had lighted on a nearby pylon. Luca did genuinely seem to like her, the way Tig had liked me once upon a time. Maybe in Luca's head they were only friends, but something else might well be growing in the depths of him. It had happened that way for Tig. He'd told me so last night, and in spite of everything, I felt a little flush of pleasure. Tig would be sleeping now, paying for his late night, but I thought he'd text me as soon as he was up. It scared me how much I was looking forward to that, waiting for it even, a bright spot in a brutal day. Rue folded her arms, and her eyes on Maddie and Luca went as cool as a shark's. Her face remained as serene as ever, but inside, I could almost feel her balance shifting. She slid me a sideways, questioning glance. She knew as well as I did that teenagers talked. They told each other things they'd never tell adults. She must be wondering what Luca might have spilled, wondering if I had a way to get that information out of my girl. My dread of the day intensified. All at once, I didn't want her in the same ocean as Maddie. I kept my face as serene as hers, though, as if such a thing had never occurred to me, as if we were just two moms, neither of whom was ready to pick out our granny names. In the end, she shrugged and handed me the paperwork, saying, "Okay, consider me on alert. God, what a puppy." She rolled her eyes. "I told him not to get attached." I left to help Jay and Winslow with the final checks and to decide a destination. Maddie and the Babbages sat in on that conversation. She was still set on the English freighter, named for the enormous cargo ship that had been sunk there to form an artificial reef. I suggested an easier site. The English freighter's stern was in a trench 80 feet down. Maddie kept pushing, though. The bow rested at 55 feet on a plateau with plenty of life, perfect for Luca. I knew why she was pressing. Last time we were there, we'd seen a bull shark. Luca was wild to see one. The Babbages chimed in on Maddie's side, reminding me I had only one student to watch out for. Everyone else was an advanced diver with multiple certifications, and dive conditions were near perfect. Calm seas and sunshine. I gave in. The English freighter it is. We were ready to go, but Rue and Luca weren't on board. She'd called him out to the picnic table, and they were locked in an intense conversation. She was dressing him down pretty good by the looks of it. She put a firm hand on his shoulder, but he shrugged her off, shaking his head in an emphatic no. I wondered exactly what he was denying. She wouldn't mind a crush, all kids got them. But she'd care, passionately, if Luca had been spilling secrets. He turned his back on her and stomped toward the boat, still shaking his head in adamant denial. Maybe he really hadn't told Maddie anything. If they were being chased by the man who had beaten his mother so brutally, he might well have kept his mouth shut. When I confronted Maddie this afternoon, treating her exactly the way Rue was treating me, demolishing her trust in me. Would it be for nothing? Luca came aboard, sitting down by Maddie at the back of the boat, squarely in the sunshine. Rue followed, her face deliberately blank, manually leaking the tension out of her body like it was so much air. The Babbages had all chosen seats under the canopy. Instead of joining Luca, Rue went into the shade and took the open seat by Mark, giving him a brilliant smile. We set out, and I chose a spot between the two groups, trying to eavesdrop in both directions. The kids leaned over the side on a dolphin watch, hoping some would come and give us an escort. They liked to play in the wake. Maddie was in high spirits. Luca seemed to be as well, but he kept stealing little sideways glances at his mother. The fight had looked like a whopper. I'd need to make sure his head was fully in the game before I took him under. Rue, for her part, seemed oblivious that she had ever borne a child named Luca. She gazed up at Mark Babbage, asking him how he got into scuba. He was a good-looking fellow, tall and broad and athletic. He and his brother had grown up on the coast of Texas, he was saying, and they'd both been diving since they were kids. They had met Leslie on a scuba trip to Roatan, and she was as rabid about it as they were. "What about your wife?" Rue asked him. "She never got into it," Mark said, and then his smile turned wry. "That's one reason she's not my wife anymore." "I'm sorry," Rue said, not sounding it. "I'm separated myself. I know how hard that is. So what do you do when you aren't diving?" "I'm a lawyer," he said, and almost instantly her body angled itself toward him. He was already turned so far her way that his back was to his brother. I knew then that we'd lost Rue for the duration. She was pathological, unable to stop seeking marks and stories and lawyers. This must have been how she'd looked at Tig, how she'd gotten him talking. I didn't like to think about her hands on him, her claws working into him. "Want to buddy up? I don't want to watch kids doing skill checks," she said, smiling up at him. "I want to go all the way down to the stern." "Heck yeah," he said. I was glad of it. I didn't want her anywhere near Maddie. Plus, I'd have more focus without her eyes on me. And since she and Luca were in a fight, I didn't want her presence distracting him. Luca was still shooting unhappy glances in her direction, so I went to the sunny part of the boat and got my fish ID cards out of my dive bag. I gave them to Maddie, and she started showing him the animals we would most likely encounter. By the time we neared the site, he was deep into it, more relaxed. We all began putting on our wetsuits and doing our final gear checks. I supervised Luca as he set his dive computer. He did a good job, eyes on the screen and not his mother. But when we were done, he said, "Is she not coming with us?" I shook my head. "She wants to go deep, is all. You have to stay above 60 feet until you do your advanced class, mister." His nostrils flared. "Sure," he said, sounding just like her. I understood his disappointment. This was supposed to be a family outing, and his mom had made it into a singles mingle. She was turning now to have Mark zip up her wetsuit, giving him a coy smile over her shoulder. We anchored near the bow of the freighter, and one by one, all three Babbages giant stepped expertly off into the water. Rue paused at the brink, her regulator in her hand. "Hey, Madison," she called. It was the first time she'd ever said Maddie's name. "You want to come on the deep dive with us, or stay in the kiddie pool?" I could feel the little hairs on my arms trying to rise, even compressed by my wetsuit. I would not send my girl out of sight, into the sea, with Rue. Not with Luca's secrets likely locked up tight inside her. "No, thanks," Maddie said, hardly looking up. All her focus was on Luca. Rue didn't press. She put her regulator in, and then, with a step and a splash, she was gone. I felt instantly calmer. "You ready?" I asked. Luca nodded. He seemed more focused now, too, shuffling in his fins toward the back of the boat. I held my mask and regulator to steady them, and Giant stepped in. The ocean caught me. It was in a beautiful mood, sloshing me gently as I followed the trail line out of the way. I turned back to watch Luca make a good entry. He'd remembered to inflate his BCD, and he bobbed to the surface, grinning around his regulator. He signaled Winslow that he was okay and then got out of the way for Maddie. We stayed on the surface for a few minutes, doing Luca's buoyancy and weight checks. He was light, and I had Winslow pass me another 2 pounds. It was part of his certification, but it also gave Rue and the Babbages time to follow the side of the wrecked ship down and away from where we would be diving. We descended slowly, staying vertical, letting Luca get his bearings and equalize. Visibility was okay, about 30 feet, and I saw Luca's eyes widen with excitement when he looked down between his fins and realized we were descending into a huge, weaving cloud of silvery small bait fish. They parted for us like a curtain, and the bow of the English freighter came into view. Luca's bubbles stopped. I touched his arm to get his attention, then waved my hand gently back and forth, the signal to breathe. I heard his Darth Vader inhale, and then his bubbles were streaming up again. Maddie came up on his other side and grabbed his hand, tugging at him, wanting to show him a pair of butterfly fish. They were shadowing each other, mated for life. He checked his air gauge and then turned with her. Maddie played her light over a flashy little school of blue and yellow damselfish, making their colors brighten and shine. I followed, glad to see them sticking so close. This was my favorite place to be on Earth. And yet, I could not shake my unease. We were all in the water with a predator, much more dangerous than any bull shark. Luca was doing a good job with his form and his buoyancy, though to stay in position, he made little flaily kicks and hand waves, very common for new divers. He only blundered into the bottom once, churning up the silt. The salt in the water made him more buoyant than he had been in the pool, and he'd overcompensated. He inflated and got up without overcompensating, then got into a good horizontal position, Maddie's hand steadying him. Just to starboard, there was a low, cave-like opening in the hull, the edges mossy and jagged. I let myself sink down to peer inside with them. We hovered, and I added my large, bright light to Maddie's smaller one, pointing into the interior. We weren't going to penetrate. Neither Luca nor Maddie had the training, and I did not have the equipment. Our light captured the head of a green moray eel poking out of some rubble. A little sea turtle soared over the eel, hurrying out of the opening past us. She angled up, going for a breath. Luca turned to hurry after her. She sped up, frightened, giving him a disgruntled look over her shoulder. He stopped and simply hung vertically in the water, watching her flippers spinning her away. I was touched by his instant and intuitive empathy. Whatever had happened between him and my stepdaughter, I couldn't believe it was pure manipulative evil. I hovered, my hands clasped, watching as Maddie took his arm and rolled him, showing him how to lie back and watch the turtle rise out of our range of visibility. Then she tugged him onward, down the side of the ship. I stayed a few feet behind, letting them play their way down the slope, trusting Maddie. She stopped them right at 55 feet. They were still holding hands, though I wasn't sure if this was underwater romance or security. He tried to move down, and she signaled no, showing him her depth gauge. He checked his, then gave an okay sign. He also checked his air again, forming a good habit, and reported it to Maddie without being asked. She reported her air level back. She'd used less, which was no surprise. New divers were air pigs, plus he was male and weighed more than she did. Watching the kids spin and frolic like seal puppies, I felt my headache abating. The underwater magic was doing its good work in me. The ocean seemed large enough to hold the truth, and me, and even Rue, with room enough to be at peace.
We didn't see the other group at all, and Rue's literal vanishing into the depths helped, too. When Luca's air gauge read 1,800 PSI, I signaled to turn the dive, and we worked our leisurely way back to the anchor line. Once we reached it, Luca did a perfect pre-ascent check, signaling, noting his time, and then looking up, his hands raised over his head to protect it. We flutter-kicked gently up, deflating as we went, though once I had to take Luca's hose and vent air, he was rising too fast. At 15 feet, we made our safety stop, hovering and letting our bodies decompress, while a trio of barracuda hung in the water, watching us. When we surfaced, Luca's eyes were positively glowing. He swapped his regulator for his snorkel, pausing in between to say to Maddie, "Oh my God!"
"I know, right?"
she said, swapping out her own regulator. She headed for the ladder first, handing her fins up to Winslow. He took them, looking past her to me. I felt a shiver in my spine when I saw his face, concerned and questioning. I gave him the okay sign, but he did not signal back. I heard him call to Captain Jay.
"Dad, come here a sec."
Luca headed up the ladder next. Winslow helped him aboard, but he was still darting glances at me, his broad brown forehead wrinkled. As soon as Luca was out of the way, I passed my fins up to him.
"Where's Rue?"
he asked me, quiet, as I came up. I dropped my regulator out of my mouth. "She's with the Babbages," I told him, but as I climbed aboard, I saw that all three Babbages were already sitting in the shade of the canopy, eating oranges.
"They came up 15 minutes ago," Winslow said.
I hadn't seen them pass us. All my focus had been on the kids, plus they could have come up the other side. Winslow was still talking.
"Mark got low on air, but she had more than half her tank. He said she joined your group."
Mark had a good 70 pounds on her. He would have used his air up much faster.
"We didn't see her at all," I told Winslow.
Captain Jay was scanning the water. I turned, still in my gear, to help Jay look, and so did Winslow. My mind was racing. The sea was relatively calm. If there were bubbles, they would not be hard to find. But there was nothing.
"Hey, where's Rue?"
Mark called behind us.
"What?"
Maddie said. She had just finished helping Luca out of his BCD. I ignored them, looking over the site, still bubble hunting. My heart was pounding. 1,000 different things were happening in my head, too fast to catalog or even comprehend. I could see only one thing true and clear. No bubbles meant no breath. No breath meant...
"She was with you,"
Luca said. His voice had gone high, edged in hysteria. Mark was talking, fast and defensive.
"No, she went to join your group. You guys were right there. We saw you."
"You left her?"
Luca said, the pitch of his voice going higher.
"You were 20 feet away,"
Mark sounded almost pleading, but I kept my eyes on the water, seeking. No bubbles, no breath, no Rue. I felt sweat break out all over my body inside my wetsuit. I'd dreamed of this, a world with no Rue. In my dream, it had made everything so easy, but now her son was standing right behind me. Mark was still babbling.
"I swear she was heading right to you when I went up."
His brother put a steadying hand on his shoulder.
"Stop," Captain Jay said, firm and calm. "Everyone, put your head over the sides, all the way around the boat. Look for her bubbles."
They hurried to obey, but the pros all knew that it was busy work. I checked my air gauge. Half empty, but changing tanks would cost me precious minutes.
"Since they came up, I've only seen one patch of bubbles," Winslow told me on the quiet.
I let that sink in, my emotions too mixed and loud to read.
"We assumed it was all four of you. I'm going to gear up."
He headed for the cabin, moving fast. I called, "Mads, get me a full tank from that rack," then opened the storage chest to dig out one of Winslow's rec reels.
I don't see any bubbles,
Luca said, almost a howl.
Monster, oh my God, Maddie said, hurrying to me with the tank, tears standing in her eyes.
What does it mean?
Luca said, following her to me. Maddie turned to put her hand on his shoulder, and he shook her off like an angry horse touched by flies.
What does it mean? We don't see bubbles.
Mark looked sick and stricken. We all knew what it meant. I was already sliding my fins on again. Winslow was back on deck, attaching his BCD to a fresh nitrox tank.
If there's not bubbles, how's she breathing? Is she down there? Not breathing?
Luca said. His eyes, wide and terrified, streamed tears. Either every minute counted, or I had all the time in the world. I took 30 seconds. There's a chance she's in the wreck, I told Luca. If she is, her bubbles are trapped inside the hull, okay? He nodded, a little calmer. Calm enough to let us all do what we had to do.
Anyone here trained on penetrating wrecks?
None of us,
Leslie said, speaking for her group. I said, then keep your asses on the boat. If Rue was alive, she had to be in the wreck. The last thing I needed was a herd of Babbages going in and getting stuck and lost and churning up the silt.
You said not to go in there,
Luca said, as I shuffle-walked to the back. Winslow was still gearing up. I called to him, I'll take the east side, you go west, and then put my regulator in.
Got it,
Winslow said. I could hear Maddie saying all the right things now to Luca, like a pro.
Because you're not even open water certified yet. Monsters penetrated wrecks 100 times. Winslow, too. They know how to.
Then I was splashing in, the extra air tank dragging me down. I gave myself more buoyancy and started a controlled descent, horror and a strange, giddy hysteria at war inside me. I breathed, tried to let the chaos and fear clogging the boat stay on it, high above me. I equalized, calmer and sharper with every foot I dropped. I left the spare tank clipped to the anchor line, then kicked away, heading down the east side of the English freighter. If Rue was dead, my heart did ache for Luca. That was a real, true feeling, and I clung to it. Luca's father, the man he didn't speak of, could well be the same man Rue was running from, violent and dangerous. If Rue was dead, that man would come for Luca. It would be awful for Jay and Winslow, too. They could lose their business, though they had done nothing wrong. I could lose my job as well, all because Rue had been reckless. I could not let any of this happen if I could help it. I would not. But another thought slipped through, bubbling up unstoppably. If Rue was dead, so many things got easy. I pushed that away. I had to do everything by the book right now. I had to make the same choices I would make if it were Leslie Babbage or my own Mads gone missing. But if Rue was dead... I sped up, pushing through a swirling curtain of baitfish. I'd never lost a diver, and I was damn well going to do this search correctly, as if my goal were not to lose one now. I made myself imagine bringing up Rue's body, still and pale and open-eyed, unbreathing, laying her out on the deck in front of her son, in front of Maddie. Jesus. My breath hitched, and I worked to even it out. I could not afford the air that emotion cost me. I was going to do this right. And yet, I'd sent Winslow west. The kids and I had stayed near the bow, but definitely west. If Rue had gone in, it was more likely she'd done it here, on this side. Even with the limited peripheral vision the scuba mask gave me, I'd have been much more likely to see her if they'd come up on the west. When I chose east, I'd given myself the greater odds of finding her. I understood then, very deep, deeper than thinking, that I was keeping my options open.
I shook that away, focused on efficient movement and conserving air. If she was findable, I'd find her. She would be alive or not.